thank you for the introduction. My name is Joseph Burke. I am currently a PhD student at Texas A&M University in soil science. And today I will be discussing with you some of the work we've been doing to try and evaluate what is soil health on the Texas High Plains. And that's one of those fun words you can use based on the group that you're talking to about what is soil health. Farmers have one definition, microbiologists have an entirely different one, and then it seems like everyone in the cotton industry is kind of in this weird area where we don't really know what it is or how we're going to measure it. And so we hope to muddy the water up again today with some of the results that we will be showing. So along with my co-presenters, Dr. Katie Lewis and Dr. Paul DeLon, I'll be discussing some of those things. So we get to the question of what is soil health and how do we define what we're going to be measuring? The NRCS has this nice vague definition for us that soil health is the continued capacity of a soil to function as a vital living ecosystem that sustains plant, animals, and humans. And so when they published this, some of the people asked, well, how is that any different than what we've been treating soil in the past? And I think what the component they really wanted to add is the biology. We've done a lot of work trying to understand the chemical and the physical side of things as how they relate to plant function. But now we want to know the biological side of things. What is the biology that is driving our systems? And in West Texas, this has been a key component of a lot of research programs. There's two things you need to take from this, though. The first being the word function. What is the function of our soils? And for us, in our research program, it's to produce cotton. So if the functions of soil health do not relate back to that, then it's not performing as a healthy soil, especially if they're antithesis to that. And finally, that these are both inherent and dynamic soil characteristics. The soil characteristics of West Texas are very different from that in, let's say, Illinois or Iowa, where they have these beautiful mollisol soils that they stole from us during the Pliocene age. And so finally, those inherent or dynamic components that we can study. So dynamics are some of the things that I'll be discussing with you today. Within this, the NRCS gives us an outline of what we should do to measure soil health. And they give us four key components. First, that you should manage your soil more by disturbing it less. That you should keep the soil covered as much as possible, keep a living root throughout the year, and then finally diversify your soil biota with plant diversity. So you stimulate the below ground stuff by stimulating the above ground stuff. And so on the soil or the Texas High Plains, we have about three major things that farmers do to do that. The first is reduced or no tillage, covers the managing more by disturbing less. We encourage cover crop use. And then also some crop rotations between cotton and usually another grain crop of some kind. In the systems I'll be discussing today, though, they are continuous cotton systems with cover crops, one of the more common options. But within this system, we're trying to, again, understand yield. So when you bring yield back to the picture, there's a few studies that we can look at. One published by Dr. Katie L. Lewis, previously in Agronomy Journal, is examining a conventional tillage treatment versus a soil health component, or a no-till rye and a no-till mix study. This study was conducted over 21 years, and on the x-axis, we're looking at those three management practices for the last 4 years, and on the y-axis, we're looking at lint yield and pounds per acre. And as you can see, there's really not any trends, except for 2 years in a row where we saw that the conventional till out-yielded the no-till rye. And so we try to understand why. If after 21 years we're not seeing the benefits of these soil health management practices, then what are we doing? So the NRCS gave us some money, right? And what they wanted to do is they wanted to do a whole bunch of soil sampling in several different systems and assess the usefulness and repeatability of proposed soil health metrics across different regions. We were lucky to be one of the sites that was chosen in 6 different states where we examined 13 different soil health indicators, both in physical, chemical, and biological sets. What I wanted to show today, though, is we're going to focus on the ones that are most related to biology. That's the soil organic carbon, the active carbon or permanganate oxidizable carbon fractions, soil respiration, two enzymes, beta-glucosidase and beta-glucosaminidase, and then finally the phospholipid fatty acids or PLFAs. So within that, we chose two sites that are most representative for our farming management practices on the Southern High Plains. One is a continuous cotton cropping system at the Agricultural Complex for Advanced Research and Extension Systems in La Mesa, Texas. And this is that study that was established in 1998. and then a native system, which is the Wellman Native Range site near Wellman, Texas. And there was about 31.2 miles difference between these two sites. The Wellman site was picked because it was the only site that we could find that had the same soil type that had never been plowed in our region entirely. So the soil type we chose was the Amarillo fine sandy loam. The reason for this is twofold. One, it's what we had on hand. And two, it's because it's the most extensively distributed benchmark series on the southern high plains, accounting for about 65% of the soils of semi-arid West Texas on the southern high plains portion. Again, those two systems are a continuous cotton system established in 1998. That's a conventional tillage with a winter fallow. I'll refer to it as CT moving forward. The no tillage with a rye cover planted at 45 kilograms per hectare in the fallow periods as a rye no-till, or RNT. And then no tillage with the mixed species cover, I'll refer to that as MNT, that was planted at 45 kilograms per hectare. So this is a little confusing, but essentially we always had rye for the last 21 years, but in 2014 we split those rye plots in half and added a mixed species cover to get an extra treatment in there. And that was planted at 10% hairy vetch, 33% winter pea, 50% rye, and 7% radish by weight. And in the native system, again, the historical record shows at least 80 years unplowed, so I like to say that it was established during the Pliocene age, about 2.58 million years ago, give or take. And then finally, our statistical analyses that we're looking at, it's a randomized complete block design with three replications in all the systems. Mean separation was performed using Fisher's LSD at an alpha value of 0.05. And the statistics were performed using SAS ProcGlimix and ProcCore. And then the principal component analysis I'll show you at the end, that was built with JUMP. So with that, we have our five major areas that I studied. Organic carbon as a loss on ignition, the active carbon, which is a reaction with dilute permanganate, and that's the fraction that most scientists believe is the most mineralizable carbon fraction available. We have this carbon mineralization study, which is a three-day CO2 evolution following the re-wetting of previously dried soil by Franz Lubbers. PLFA, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's essentially a measure of the carbon fractions within microbial cells. And based on the length of those carbon chains, it will tell you the class and diversity of your system. So it breaks it up into different groups, and then based on the size of that group, you can estimate your microbial biomass. And then the community structure within that. And then finally, the two enzymes that I love to death are beta-glucosidase, which is a carbon cycling enzyme, which is responsible for cellulose degradation, and beta-glucosaminidase, which is responsible for both carbon and nitrogen cycling, and it breaks down chitin. With that, we're going to start with what food microbes have, or the carbon source. And so we'll look at organic carbon first. Along the x-axis, we have management practice for both the 0 to 5 and the 5 to 10 meters, 10 to centimeter depths. And then on the y-axis, we have soil organic carbon as milligrams per kilogram. The interesting thing to note is that the 0 to 5 centimeter depth, there is no difference between our conservation management practices and a continuous native site when compared to the conventional till, which is interesting to note. It shows that even after these systems have been plowed 21 years ago, they can recover to the same organic carbon levels as a traditionally unplowed site. At the 0 to 5 centimeter depth, we do start to see some stratification of that carbon, and this is most likely due to the decreases in organic carbon at the native site. It's most likely due because we just don't have as many inputs in that system as we do in an intensively managed agricultural system. So when we look at the active site, or what the food that microbes have, same system on the x-axis is going to be management practice. On the y-axis, we're looking at permanganate oxidizable carbon as milligrams per kilogram. So we went down a fraction of 10, or 100, 1,000, sorry. And again, we see that same separation, where we have more microbially available carbon in our conservation management practices than we do in the native and the conventional till. And this, again, comes back to inputs. Where we're intensively managing this system, we have actively growing roots all year long, we're going to be having greater active carbon inputs into the system compared to a native or the conventional till site. And this trend continues again into the lower depths as well. We examine this all the way to 100 centimeter depths, but since those depths aren't really important for biology, they've been excluded from this study. And there's been a lot of interest understanding the relationship between these two, with the theory being that if you can increase your organic carbon or your active carbon, you should then therefore see an increase in your soil organic carbon. And we kind of help to illustrate that again. Our squared value is a little low for what we like to see. We've seen it as high as 0.7 at some other studies, but this is still pretty good. And seeing that same trend that we're seeing across the country, where as you increase your active carbon, you're also increasing your soil organic carbon. Now, when we try to look at the community itself, what we're starting to see is that in the carbon mineralization, or the ability of that those microbes that are present to recover from a drying event or a stress event, there's no difference between treatments. On our x-axis, we have our management practices, and then on our y-axis, we have our mineralizable carbon in milligrams of CO2 carbon per 20 grams of soil. And again, you can see there's no difference between any of our treatments across there. But when we look at the communities that are actually there based on PLFAs, we do start to see some stratification. On our y-axis this time, we have our total PLFAs in picomoles per gram of soil, and we see the greatest number of PLFAs in our native system. So that system is more diverse than our rye and our mixed species or our conservation management practices compared to the conventional till. And that's important to note because that should have an impact on the ability of those microbes to perform a function. And then when you go within depth, though, we start to see that decrease, that decreasing trend. This is pretty common amongst all PLFA data that you'll see from comparing native to agricultural sites. But then we will look at beta-glucosidase, which again is responsible for that cellulose breakdown. We start to see some differences. On the y-axis, we have beta-glucosidase, which is milligrams of p-nitrophenol, that yellow coloring that you start to see, which is an indication of activity, per kilogram of soil per hour, as it's done in an incubation study. These are considered ideal conditions. So if I give a known amount of p-nitrophenol to a system, how much of that enzyme will it break down over time? And that's what you're essentially measuring in an hour. So what we're seeing in the rye system is that it yielded the greatest p-nitrophenol compared to the mixed species cover and then to the conventional tilled site, with no difference between the rye or the native at the top soil depth. At the 5 to 10 centimeter depth, we do start to see some the trend of the mixed species cover starting to edge back up again towards the top, which we expect to see with something that you intensively manage. We see a very similar trend here in the beta-glucosaminidase, which again is responsible for chitin breakdown. And so on the y-axis this time, we have beta-glucosaminidase enzyme as milligrams of p-nitrophenol per kilogram of soil per hour. And the mixed species cover yielded the greatest p-nitrophenol compared to the conventional till and the native till. And this is most likely due to the indication of there's a class of microbes that's responsible for this. So there's greater fungal biomass that we've seen in our conservation site compared to our native site. And that trend continues into the lower depths. So then we get back to the question that all biologists want to prove to us agricultural scientists is, can biology predict yield? And our answer for this system in this year is no. Unfortunately, it cannot. What we see is we see three distinct groups within this principal component analysis: a biological clustering, carbon mineralization off by itself for some reason, and then we see yield as a complete antithesis to our biology. So therefore, our biological indicators for soil health cannot predict yield, which gets us back to our question: if it can't predict yield, then it's not a function of soil health in our systems. And so we can look at each of these individual indicators, and yield had terrible correlations with everything. So in conclusion, conservation management practices exceed some soil dynamic soil health characteristics compared to the native site, which is what we want to see. Microbial diversity was greatest in the native site. However, the activity of those microbes was greatest in the conservation management programs, which is really exciting to see. And that supports intensive soil health management as a viable alternative to native systems in the semi-arid Texas high plains, where they want us to convert back to CRP lands. Biological indicators of soil health were not a good predictor of yield and were not correlated. Therefore, additional analyses are required to determine the potential relationships between soil health and yield. And then finally, soil health management as a function of production is difficult to study, diagnose, if we keep up with our health terms, and interpret. Therefore, further study to understand that relationship between cotton production and other soil health metrics is really needed. prior to just expecting farmers to adopt them. With that, I'd like to thank a lot of people, the Texas A&M AgriLife Research Groups of Dr. DeLon and Dr. Lewis, NRCS Zone Office for classifying our soils for us, University of Missouri, who did our PLFA analysis, and then I'd like to thank A&M for paying me every month, and finally, for the NRCS to pay for all of this research. With that, I say thank you, and hopefully I didn't talk too long. Yes, ma'am. So the question was, what would be my recommendation to farmers as a takeaway of this research? And what I would say is that don't rely strictly on flashy articles you see written about Iowa in the progressive farming magazines, but really think about cropping systems in your area and what research is being done to see if those systems work within your cropping system and to understand that. And honestly, just to call your local soil scientists and just ask them a question.